This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, it is June 7th, 2019, and it is the beginning, the first week of GLBTQIA plus Pride. The whole month is dedicated to Pride. That's why you're seeing rainbows everywhere. I even saw an entire rainbow archway done in balloons at the corner of my street where there is a pretty traditional Mexican-owned party store. And I mean, they do a different archway all the time. And so I think it's not a coincidence because it's Queer Pride this weekend in LA. So I applaud them because that was unexpected. So I have actually talked about this person before on my show, but haven't had her on. So I'm really excited that she's here. And we're live. So if you want to call us and talk to us, you can at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. Let me tell you about her. Antonia Crane is the author of the memoir Spent. She is a stripper, sex worker, activist, filmmaker, and writing instructor. Her writing can be found in the New York Times, Playboy, Cosmopolitan, The Establishment, and tons of other places. She is the grand prize winner for Prism International's nonfiction contest for her essay, How to Dig a Ditch. Antioch University Los Angeles awarded her a Distinguished Alum in the Area of Activism and Community Service Award in 2018. She wrote and produced the episode Poppy for the scripted series Driven. Her screenplay, The Lusty, which was co-written by Transparent director Silas Howard, is a recipient of the San Francisco Film Society Kenneth Rainin Foundation grant in screenwriting. She teaches essay and memoir at UCLA Extension. Welcome to Sex Out Loud.
Hi.
Hi. I'm so glad to have you.
Thank you for reading all that.
Oh my God. You're totally welcome. I mean, there's a lot going on here. Like you're doing a lot of writing, a lot of work, a lot of organizing.
Yeah. Extended at best.
Yeah. So I want to start with your memoir, Spent, which I read. Actually, I read it a couple weeks ago. I've been like deep diving into memoirs, and you had given it to me the last time we saw each other in person. And I was like, it's on my, you know, it's on my bedside table. I'm ready. And first of all, I loved it.
Thank you.
One of the things that struck me is it had this balance of a narrative of a sex worker where there were bad days, there were totally neutral, ambivalent days, and then there were totally exciting, fun, pleasurable days. And I felt like, and the reason I take note of that is because I often think, especially in mainstream media, but even some people's memoirs, that people will lean to one end of the binary or the other, which is, I was completely exploited by this. My life is miserable. Please, like, this is a redemption narrative. I've turned myself around by giving up sex work. Or the sort of, I got my master's degree at Smith, and then I went to The Lusty Lady, and it was so empowering. Oh my God, everything's great.
Yeah.
And you managed to not to not reproduce that binary.
Thank you. Yeah, there were sort of like bad decades and then ambivalent days and great days. And I think that was on purpose because I felt that the terrain of sex work memoir did just go to those two extremes. There was the happy hooker extreme, mm-hmm. which was useful at the time for a lot of reasons. And then there's the sad kind of victim mentality or, you know, I survived sex work and now my life is perfect memoir. And I was so kind of enraged by those two. It's like, those are the only two things that we're allowed to have. Mm-hmm. And my life didn't look like that. And I think that memoir writing is incredibly about acute humanity, which is full of texture and extremes and gray areas and uncomfortability and huge messiness. And that's what my memoir was. It was, you know, up and down and all around. And my mother's death and the union that we did with the Lusty Lady. And it was all of these things. And so thank you. Yes. I wanted to write a memoir that was more about acute humanity, and sex work was a thread throughout, but it wasn't the only thing.
Right. That's the other thing too, is that it wasn't framed as this is a sex worker memoir, right? It didn't have in the subtitle a memoir of stripper heels and dollar bills or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like, maybe it would have done better if I would have gone that direction, but it's not the truth.
Right. But I wonder, because you're also a community organizer and an activist, if you had an inclination to write about the good parts to kind of counter the mainstream narrative, which is that we're all victimized, deluded tools of the patriarchy.
No, I didn't feel like I needed to do that. I think that the experience of sex work is so complicated, like anything in a person's life is complicated, that just showing a person going through you know, my mother dying and the relationships that I had in the book and having sex work be a part of my life and having unionizing be a part of my life. I don't know how to turn off the notifications. I don't know how to do that. That's why it sounds like.
Okay.
I turned off my phone and I don't know how to not have messages dinging on my computer. So yeah, I don't think that I was trying to do one thing or another. I was just trying to tell my story. And I felt that in doing that, I feel like sex worker stories need to be out there on every spectrum. I feel like I'm just one of a million. And some of those stories are going to be full of incredibly empowering things. But I do think that every sex worker story serves as a tool to disintegrate stigma and to squash stigma, because it makes us seen and heard, and it makes our voices louder. So my story is just one of many. I can't be all things to all people, you know, nor should any writer feel a pressure to do that, because we would just never write anything. We would never write a word if we like to be all things to all people and all things to all movements. But because I am an organizer, there was definitely that aspect of my story of organizing strippers, organizing a workforce, you know, striking, what it was to be in a labor movement, what it was to come through the early 90s and the kind of grassroots on the streets demonstration activism, and how that is different now than it was then. So, and I think it is really relevant today, actually, more than when my book even came out, because of what we're doing now. Activism is really complicated, and it has everything to do with community and patriarchy and being socialized to compete against each other and how difficult that is on every level. It's the real work. So in my book, you know, it's relationships and it's activism and it's it's sex work that's hard. It's sex work that is really fortifying. And it's sex work that stares you in the face and invites you, hopefully, into my skin while I'm doing it, so that you can feel what it's like, which I think all good storytelling does.
Absolutely. What was the hardest part to write?
My mother's death, the euthanizing my mother thing, by far.
That was so Well, it was presented in this, you're sort of unflinching in your whole narration of your life, is that it's unflinching. And so you, as me as a reader, like I can't look away and I can't deny what's happening. And so that was definitely one of the most intense parts. But you're also so straightforward about it. Like there's no sort of romanticism or like maudlin, you know, and then she whispered these words of wisdom that I have tattooed on my body and I carry with me forever. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which can also happen when you're writing about death, right? It can get a little syrupy.
Right. You know, I had no intention of writing about my mother's death.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. Say more.
So I was in grad school when she died a week into me getting into grad school, and it was like my third try getting into grad school. And I just kept deferring it because she was ill and kept the cancer would return and then would go into remission and then would return, you know, and this is how cancer is and, or can be. And so there I was in grad school and she died a week in, and I was writing a story about 1993, the mission, cooking speed, hanging out with drag queens and lighting myself on fire and my suicide attempt and dancing and kind of this world in which I lived in like 1993, 1994 Bay Area while I was at Mills College or not going, but enrolled. And my mother's dead body, my mother's live body, her body kept slipping into the text. And my degree is in fiction. I was fictionalizing my life as we do. And it just kept slipping in. And I also, the economy crashed and I lost this job that I was doing. And I got back into the sex industry full throttle while my mother had just died and while I was in grad school writing fiction. And I just couldn't get my mother's body and my body out of the text. It just, the consciousness of it slipped through my writing. And her body was it was like I was carrying her body with me in everything I was writing. I couldn't get away from it.
Mm.
And so it became the story of my body in a way. That first chapter was, I am at the Four Seasons. I'm turning a trick with this girl who's in a sex cult. And, you know, it's Christmas. I'm fucking depressed. I'm scared. I'm broke. And all I can think about is my mother's dying body. And that's the first chapter. And that's the thread throughout. And, you know, at the time that I wrote Spent, you know, euthanizing was illegal in California.
Mm-hmm.
So much that I wrote in that book is illegal and was illegal.
Right. No, true.
But murder is another thing entirely. That's a realm in which you don't want to just write about, you know, that you euthanize someone. And I wrote it, and I went to public places and I would write and I would cry and I would cry and I would write. And every time I wrote that scene, I would just cry. And that's when I knew it was working.
So okay. We have to take our first commercial break, but everyone, that gives you just a taste of what, if that's the first chapter, you can only imagine what this book is like. I mean, I highly recommend it. So let's take our commercial break. And when we come back, more with Antonia. Everyone, as you know, anal pleasure holds a spot near and dear to my heart. So let's consider how we're treating our ass across the board, especially when it comes to cleaning it. If you're using dry toilet paper or wet wipes, you're doing it wrong. Switch to Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that cleans all the crap off your butt. It easily attaches to any standard toilet in under 10 minutes and provides a precise stream straight to your butthole. Using a Tushy bidet pre-anal play is nice, and of course, after sex to clean up. Go into every experience feeling fresh and confident, and then wipe it all away at the end. I love the Tushy because it's also affordable. It only starts at $69, everyone's favorite number. So do your ass a favor and wash with Tushy. Go to hellotushy.com and get 10% off your order with the promo code SEXOUTLOUD. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, my amazing, amazing supportive sponsor, The Pleasure Chest. Pride is upon us, and The Pleasure Chest will be showcasing Pride events and people in the community all month long. A few exciting things of note. Starting June 10th, all the stores will be exclusively carrying the new B-Vibe vibrating snug plugs. You know B-Vibe makes the best anal toys on the market, and so I'm so excited, and this is the only place you can get them. You can also get a free magic wand pin with the purchase of any magic wand. Plus, Pleasure Chest has created new signature pins, and in New York and LA, you can pick up their fab new t-shirt. I have one. I just wore it the other day. It says, "Go fuck yourself." And then on the bottom, it says Masturbation Month. And it just, it works on so many levels. You know what I mean? And if that's not enough, there is free shipping on pleasurechest.com all month. So go to the website, check it out, get yourself something nice. And you can also use coupon code Tristan and get a free massage candle with your order. Okay. We are talking to Antonia Crane about her memoir, Spent, which you heard a little bit about before the break. Now, what was the reaction of either people who were featured in the memoir or just your community in general when it came out?
It was really positive. But back to that massage candle. When I get that massage candle. I think the biggest issue with wondering what was going to happen with the book was to me how my family was going to react to it. Mm-hmm. So I read parts of it to my stepfather who was in the room, and I lucked out, and he was had no problem with it whatsoever. The community, it's been a slow burn. I went with a local publisher, which is, you know, me mostly doing a lot of the work by myself, boots on the ground, you know, trying to sell it and doing really fun events, and I have had a great time, you know, with the book. But I think the response has been really positive for the most part. I had a great review. I've had really good reviews, and it's just a matter of getting in front of people. But I think it has made, I've had a lot of letters from strippers specifically and sex workers who felt very connected and very positive about just the sex industry being shown in this light. And people were very moved. People who lost a parent, because that's a real motherfucker when you lose a parent. Just relating to that on a personal level.
Absolutely. And I'm writing about that now in my memoir. And let me tell you, I will do anything to not write about it. I will write about everything else I can possibly write about than that. I mean, it's really intense. And also, there was so much going on in your life. Like you said, like there's so many things going on in your life. But then this one thing just sort of keeps coming back. I'm also amazed that you wrote about it as it happened. I feel like I needed a lot of space in order to look back on it. And you're saying it kept coming back. And so you were writing about her death just in right afterwards.
Yeah, it's a terrible idea, but I do it. I write with a blade still in and bleeding out, and it's not ideal. But it's how I work. It's just, I feel that the best stuff that I write happens when I'm feeling greatly, when I'm bubbling over, when I am overwhelmed by my own feelings. And that is the best time for me to write. It's not everyone's best time. I think that that distance, so that you can have that insight, looking back, injecting humor, injecting wisdom, injecting insight, that's all really useful, great stuff. And it's beautiful stuff to have in a memoir. And, you know, it's not what I did with those scenes. I was writing about it while it was happening. I encourage you to write about it while you're going through it. Writing is such a, I like to fall into the arms of writing when anything is going on in my life. And as you're processing it, it doesn't have to be good. In fact, I hope it's a mess, whatever you're writing, because it can be such a comfort.
So as you said in the book, there's also this piece about the Lusty Lady. For people who may not know that history of the Lusty Lady unionizing, will you give us a quick summary of what happened that you were a part of?
Right. We were being filmed by customers who were bringing cameras in, and we saw the red lights, and it was because we didn't see it because of the one-way glass that was in certain.
Wait, let's start over. Yeah. What is Lusty Lady? It's a specific kind of a strip club. It's not your typical one.
I always think everybody knows about this.
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah. So in the 90s, there was a peep show behind glass in San Francisco in North Beach called the Lusty Lady. There was also one in Seattle. Ours, it was known to be women owned and operated, and we would give completely nude shows behind glass, and people would come into booths and stick money in the slots, and these doors would creak open and make creaking sounds. It was so weird, the sounds, and we would dance together on a brightly lit stage. We called it the fishbowl, and there was a pole, and we were being filmed by strangers would come in the glass where we couldn't really see a person. We could only see the lights from the video cameras, and we didn't want to be filmed. There were also other things going on at the time, racist hiring and firing policies, and like a lot of body shame politics and favoritism and random hirings and firings and a lot of unfair things. And we were fighting against all of that as well, equally important, if not more. But the one thing that we stood together on was get out the one-way mirrors and don't allow people to film us. Because when we're talking about, you know, when I talk about this, it's hard to describe and it's hard to feel alarmed because we live in a pornified world where people are like basically showing their bodies and showing a lot of nudity at all times. And it's very normalized, which is great. But we were dancing nude, and so we were showing pink, like inches away from men's faces, and they were filming it. And so
you weren't actually getting paid. I mean, I think the other issue here is you weren't getting paid to then be filmed. You were getting paid to do this as a one-time experience captured in the mind of whoever was behind the glass.
Exactly. Like from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., we clocked in and clocked out, and we didn't know at that time what that meant, and we were frightened by the web. And we had teachers and people who weren't out to their partners or people who were not out as sex workers at all and had kids and had lives in which they were enjoying a certain kind of anonymity in their sex work lives. And of course, different names and all of that. And that was completely taken away. If you're being filmed, who knows where that footage is going? And no, you're not getting paid for it.
So you get together and organize, which is just under capitalism, you know, prohibitive and really not encouraged among the workers. Like the workers to talk to each other, to talk to each other about money, to talk to each other about the treatment by the management. And at that point, there was no such thing as a union of any kind of sex worker. Is that right?
I believe that's true. There could have been other ones. I've researched this and seen some successes around that time, but they never lasted because union busting tactics and corporations have so much power, so much clout, so much money, aka Uber.
Right. So you got together and you actually managed to unionize the workforce.
We did. It took 2 years. But we did organize it. And SEIU, they didn't want us. We had a personal relationship with SEIU. We were using their office to print materials, make posters. So we actually had a sympathetic person in that office. And we organized. It was very person-to-person, meeting in restaurants, meeting in homes, leaving messages on people's answering machines. This is how it happened then. And it took 2 years.
And since then, what other labor organizing has there been among strippers? Are there other unionized workforces of strippers now in the United States?
No, there is a union that we call the Vowel Union. And I believe it's, you know, Adult Entertainers Industry Union. That's why I call it the Vowel Union. And it's mostly for recorded performers. And they don't have bylaws for strippers. So I will say no. Fight me on this, but I think there is no union for strippers right now, which is why we are organizing again and trying to decide how to move forward. And, you know, it's not 1996 anymore. Mm-hmm. The corporations have only gotten larger and more insidious, and they will stop at nothing to confuse, divide, and punish the workers.
I had lunch with my friend Sarah today, and she said, I think we're all going to become citizens of Amazon, the nation. And I was like so terrified. And yet there was a part of my brain that went, that could happen, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have a monopoly on so many things now that they could just take over. Oh my God.
It's a huge problem because it's really the problem of like one person, man, white man, horrifying narcissistic white man having too much power.
Right, right.
And being beyond reproach, am I right?
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about Soldiers of Pole, because this is relevant.
Yes.
What is it? What are you doing?
It's a labor movement of strippers now that we are employees. So the important thing that we didn't touch on about the Lusty Lady is that we were clocked in, clocked out, hourly employees. And that makes it possible, aka just easier, to unionize. It's just that you don't have to go through that extra loophole of saying, hey, by the way, we are a workforce. Oh yeah, mm-hmm. You are. Like, okay, yes, we're a workforce. Thank you, California Supreme Court.
Instead of like them constantly saying they're independent contractors, they're independent right. contractors.
Yeah. Yeah. And so thank you, Lorena Gonzalez. We are AB5 just passed on Wednesday. We are employees. Now let's move on. So that said, we can unionize, but the rhetoric and the misinformation that's being leaked out through the corporations is so effective. And so it is so effective. It is so rampant. It's been going on for decades. That's what we're working against right now, is just informing strippers of their rights. They're angry because the way the law is being implemented is that it's punishing strippers more, which happens whenever, for instance, whenever strippers take a strip club to court and win a class action lawsuit, and they win like 99.9% of the time, for back wages, the people that get punished are the workers that are still on the shop floor. Mm. And that's on purpose. That's to punish the worker. And that's going on now. So now that we're employees, the clubs are charging us to pay our own wages, and doing it in an incredibly confusing and punitive way. And so okay, we'll get them information.
I want to hear more about this. We've got to take another commercial break. Oh. A-Rod has been messaging me, and I've been a little bit caught up in the conversation and I wasn't paying attention, which I usually, like, this is half my job, is to pay attention to A-Rod and the timekeeper. So let's take another break. And when we come back, we will continue this conversation and also find out how you, my brave listener, can support Soldiers of Pole. So stay with us. Hi, everyone. It's Tristan. Are you passionate about sex education and want to build your career in the field, but you're not sure how to do it? Or maybe you've begun your journey as a sex educator and you're ready to get serious, streamline your business, and get paid. My Sex Educator Bootcamp training programs, Level 1 and 2, are now available online, and they are great for sexuality professionals of all kinds. You'll learn how to develop your vision and mission and communicate them effectively. Discover tools for branding, marketing, networking, media coverage, building your audience, and more. The number one question people ask me is, Tristan, how did you get involved in sex education and how can I? Well, today's the day to find out. Go to sexeducatorbootcamp.com.
Hey, Dylan, guess what?
What's that, Ginger?
I'd love for you to come with me on this amazingly sex-positive, queer, and polyam-friendly, kink-aware, all-inclusive resort vacation in paradise.
Oh, really? This trip sounds great. Who are these people, and how did they get the elusive Ginger A. Bentham stamp of approval?
It has the sexiest name. It's called The Swing Set Takes Desire. It takes place in Cancun, Mexico, at Desire Riviera Maya, November 2nd through 9th, 2019. This Trip to Paradise is co-hosted by Javi and Shara from Ending the Sexual Dark Age, Bradford and Angela from the By the By podcast, and special guest Tristan Taramino, author, podcaster, and creator of excellent ethically produced porn. And you can find more information at swingsetdesire.com.
Oh, Ginger.
What?
Get with the times. Everybody knows about swingsetdesire.com. In fact, Life on the Swingset is hosting its 8th annual Trip to Paradise. Drop your information in the form at swingsetdesire.com and boom, hot tub happy hour.
No way. I can go there and come there too. There's this super hot harness I've been dying to use.
Absolutely. In fact, I invite you and all of our listeners to go to swingsetdesire.com and book your trip to join us for the Swing Set Takes Desire, November 2nd through the 9th, 2019.
All right, Dylan, I'm on it. Swingsetdesire.com.
You'll be glad you came.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. So we've been talking about labor. We've talked about grief. And I, for one, you know, have been running around like a lunatic. No disrespect there. I self-identify as a lunatic. This week, getting ready for Dyke Day LA, which is an amazing event. But I've been kind of burning the candles at both ends, which I do sometimes. And the thing that is life-saving for me and has been since I was in my 20s is therapy. And one of the great things about technology is I feel like it's making therapy more accessible to more kinds of people. Ooh. So this sponsor we have is called BetterHelp, and it's an online counseling app which offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in every kind of issue you can think: depression, stress, anxiety, sleeping, trauma, grief, self-esteem. You basically connect with a professional counselor in a private online environment, right? So, and everything you do is confidential, but you can do it at your own time and at your own pace, which I think is really important for people who have barriers, whether they are financial, whether they are about transportation or taking time off of work. This is something that you can do, and you can communicate with chat and with text, and you can do it whenever you want. So I think it's also just really affordable and makes it more accessible. For you listeners, I've got a special, of course, because who doesn't love a coupon? You can get 10% off your first month with the discount code LOUDSEX. You go to betterhelp.com/loudsex. You're going to fill out their questionnaire, which is pretty straightforward. You get matched with one of 4,000 U.S. licensed therapists across all 50 states. If you try out a therapist and it doesn't work, you can pick another one, okay? So you're really, this is like you can create your own support system here. BetterHelp, and it's help, help.com/loudsex. We are back talking to Antonia Crane, and we brought up Soldiers of Pole, which is a new organizing movement. I also saw on the social media, you know, we're just a week out from celebrating International Sex Workers Day. And I think there was a big gathering of Soldiers of Pole for that. Is that right?
There was, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What'd you do?
Great. We decided to have a self-care spa day this year. And because last year we organized International Whore Day March and took over Hollywood Boulevard. And this year we were exhausted.
Right.
And there was just so much. And we were organizing so much and doing so much work for, particularly like the Soldiers of Pole had so many actions and working, doing a lot of work, you know, getting all of our energy, just spreading a lot of energy out into the world, just fighting at all the things. And so this year we decided to have a self-care day. And I think a lot of sex workers in LA decided to go that route.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all exhausted on so many different levels, right? And the world is not a comforting or soothing place for many of us on the margins right now. So, you know, one of the things that people ask me all the time, because I've worked in the adult industry, is why aren't porn performers unionized? Why can't there be this amazing union movement among porn people? And it's like a complicated issue. But I'm wondering if you think, what are the reasons it's especially difficult to organize strippers in this case and sex workers in general?
I'm so glad you asked. And I want to talk to you about this like so much right now. I think that as, you know, an elder who comes from like ACT UP organizing in the 90s in San Francisco when we were fighting against the huge pharmaceutical companies and stigma and Reagan, and our friends were dying, as you remember, we used to call ourselves the walking wounded. And with the sex workers, I call us the walking shamed. And what would happen was that because we came from a baseline of suffering and stigma and difficult lives and alienating lives and feeling invisible and targeted and the violence of all of that and whatever was happening in our families. I think that the saddest thing that I've seen is women tearing each other down, and women in the sex industry, because we strippers particularly, I'm going to talk about, because I'm an adult entertainer. And I'm not sure I have a lot to say about film and what that is like. I feel like we have a lot of similarities, but I feel like it's different. For strippers, you know, it's exciting and we're revolutionaries by nature because we've managed to monetize the male gaze, but we're also competing for it. And we're socialized to hate each other and compete with each other. And then we're the walking shamed. And so those things together can make a very difficult baseline to support each other and have each other's backs. And what I want going into every situation is for us to have each other's backs and fight the system that is fucking us over on a daily basis and in the world. And in order to do that, like, it is having difficult relationships with the walking shamed, the same way that it was difficult in activism before having relationships with the walking wounded. So that's what I have to say. It's hard.
Because it's hard to unionize. It's hard to unionize, period. It's especially in this day and age when unions are actually not at the height of their power, right? As they once were.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm going to just say that. It's hard to unionize, but what you're saying is the profession is so stigmatized, right? That it adds this other layer. Like you were saying, people aren't out to their families about what they do, or people aren't out about what their actual job is. So then, and then also to protest, let's be real here, to protest, to be in the streets of Los Angeles is to be photographed, is to be on the news, is to be out as a stripper.
Yeah. And it's easier to tear each other apart than it is to tear apart a system that is so complex, so massive, so multi-layered, so insidious and hard to confront. And it's so scary that it's easier to tear each other down. But I can't help but hold out hope, because we've done it before, that if we could just have each other's backs and stand together and work against the system that is charging us to work and has charged us to work and stolen our money, stolen our tips, treated our sisters like shit. The racism, the blatant racism, the whorephobia that is in the sex industry, if we could just turn it away from each other and turn it against Deja Vu and Spearmint Rhino and every corporate club and any small club that is, you know, exploiting this workforce, then imagine how powerful we would be.
And so what is this? I want you to explain also about the new law that just passed here.
Oh, AB 5.
Yes.
AB 5 just passed. It is codifying the dynamics decision that was last April, where the Supreme Court of California decided that in order to, it just made it harder for workplaces to make employees independent contractors. It basically said that in order for a worker to be considered an independent contractor, they had to have these three things working for them. It's called the ABC law. So that passed in the Supreme Court. And then it was sort of like, well, how is this going to be implemented? Which is kind of where we find ourselves now. But then also AB 5 just passed in California saying, no, we really mean it. We really mean it. Like, we are employees. Like, there's no independent contractors, we're employees. But, you know, the money being thrown at politicians by Uber, who has worth billions now, and Google, they like their slave labor. Mm-hmm. They like their independent contractors, scared, weak, and broke. Uber is a whole other conversation. They're a more complicated workforce, I think. Working from an app, I think, is a really unique workforce, kind of like how stripping is a unique workforce. Mm-hmm. We have some things in common with a lot of people, but then we really are super different as well. We work inside of a club. It's considered legal. And yet, you know, we've managed to monetize the male gaze. And so why are men running these clubs, and why are they stealing half our money? How are they getting away with that? Like, it's just, it needs to be completely undressed from the top down, and we need to switch the power structure and just be like, no, we're actually not doing this. And the only way to do that is to actually walk out, which is what we did at the Lusty Lady. We had a no pink day. I don't know if you remember that.
Mm-hmm, I do.
We did that. We covered our pussies, and we covered our bottoms. We wore bottoms, we wore underwear, we wore signs. And we had a no pink day because if you stop production, if you have no strippers, you have no strip clubs.
Right. Right.
So we need a walkout. But it's scary. It's hard. You know, union busting corporations have done their work well over the last 30 years or more.
Okay, we're going to take another break. You can read about Antonia's life in this book, Spent, which I really recommend. And coming up, we're going to talk about some of her other projects and the representation of sex workers in the media. So stay with us.
Guess what? I'm welcoming my first cannabis advertiser. I bought this product a while ago, so when they approached me, I was so excited because it's something I actually already had and loved. The company is called 1906, a revolutionary brand of cannabis chocolate edibles. Here's what I love. They're low dose and consistently dosed, plus fast acting. I'm talking like 20 minutes. There are multiple formulas for better sleep, sex, energy, bliss, and relaxation. Here's the amazing part. They are absolutely high quality, delicious chocolates. If you know me, I am a chocolate connoisseur, and these stand above all the others I've tried. Of course, 1906 always encourages health-conscious adults to use them responsibly. They are currently at 200 dispensaries in Colorado, and you can find them at 1906newhighs.com.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I told you the Pleasure Chest is doing a bunch of stuff for Pride this month. And if you live near Los Angeles, New York, or Chicago, you can check out some of their special Pleasure Ed classes. They're all free, open to everyone. In New York City, June 12th is Butt Sex Basics. And June 14th is Joyride, the Sex Positive Comedy and Variety Show. In Chicago, June 12th, Suck It, Lick It, Love It. And June 16th, Tips, Tricks, and Sips. I think that means like booze will be served. Strap on Sex for Queers. And then in Los Angeles, June 12th, Ultimate O. June 14th, Tips, Tricks, and Sips.
sex toy basics. Go to pleasurechest.com, click on events to find out more about this. Antonia, we talked before the break about this grassroots organizing, working on the practical labor issues that strippers face. But you are also invested in changing representations of strippers and sex workers. And you've done a number of media projects, from this episode you did for Driven, The Lusty, which is about the Lusty Lady, and you're doing a new documentary on Soldiers of Pole. So tell me why that is also important.
Well, you know, I've been working, trying to write for Hollywood for a while and doing some really cool consulting, and it's been really fortifying, and it's great to get voices in the writing room and in development rooms, and we need way, way more of that. And we're working on that. And I'm working with Jill Soloway over at 5050 by 2020, which is an arm of Time's Up. And it has to do with asking of Hollywood to make space for sex workers, people of trans experience, people with disabilities, and women of color. And so it's just really super important to have a variety of sex worker voices, because they are writing about sex workers constantly. Everything, every TV show, so many movies have sex workers, and it's the same old tropes. So I am working on that. And there's a lot of different things going on. One, I'm doing a narrative. I have a narrative series that I've been working on called Whoring, which is about sex work and sex trafficking. And it's kind of like the Black Mirror of sex work.
Mm.
And that's just my own project that I'm doing. Because, you know, I went out to try to find money and support. And it's like it's hard. It's hard to find the resources and it's hard to get support.
Also, I don't know about you, but I also, a year and a half ago, was pitching a show that took place in porn, and the two lead characters were sex workers. And it's like, they're okay now showing explicit sex on TV if the show is not about sex. But even when we said, like, the sex scenes are not going to be that big of a deal, it's not what it's about, it's about the people, they were just like, but the lead characters are sex workers, we just don't. We're gonna pass.
Wow. Isn't it amazing, the stigma?
It's shocking that it is brutal, because there's a lot of crap on television. So you think, like, you funded this project, you know, you like flip around on Netflix and you're like, this got money? Really? But they're terrified of it. They are terrified of it. And the idea of centering a sex worker, I think Hollywood's not there yet.
But then they did do Bonding.
Oh, but everyone panned it universally.
Yeah.
It was awful. And it wasn't written by sex workers. So it was like dumb.
And then there's Cam, which is great.
Oh, yes. Cam is really good. Is Cam on Netflix?
It is.
Yes.
Cam's on Netflix, and it's wonderful. And
yeah, Cam is very good. You're right. You're right.
It is. But these are the golden, like, magical things. We need 1,000 of those. And it's just, we are asking Hollywood to make room for these stories, and there's no shortage of incredible sex worker writers
mm-hmm.
who have the chops, and it's just, they're just terrified, and I don't know what to do, but I'm trying to do it. We have a letter of Hollywood that we're writing with 5050 by 2020 to, you know, share with Hollywood our wit, and to, you know, ask for room, ask for access, let us in the room. So, you know, and I, it's hard. It's, Hollywood is difficult. It's a strange place. So I'm directing a documentary. You know, I don't like documentaries about sex workers at all. I hate all of it.
Well, so is The Lusty a documentary also?
No, The Lusty,
is a drama.
Feature. The Lusty is actually a fictionalized feature based on the true story.
Right. Okay.
When our lead is a woman of color, and we always wanted that, and that has always been important to us. And it's really, it's great, and it's really a period piece, and it's got the humor and the fun and the texture and just the bright joy and sadness of queer 1995. It's just, it's really fun. So that's a feature based on our true story. I've seen so much, and I'm sure there are great documentaries that I haven't seen about sex work. My problem with it is that It's usually a male lens. It's usually a penetrative gaze. Mm-hmm. It's never flattering, and it feels like they're focusing on the trauma of the person's life. And sex workers are not, they're not actresses. There's like no nuance. It's very penetrative, and I find it very unappealing, unflattering, and unnecessary. And so that said, I was like, maybe I should just direct a documentary about the union effort now. And then I tried directing and I love it. And now I don't want to do anything else. It's so fun. I love working with actors and people, and I love the process of catching what I see and writing the story and just having women talking to women about labor.
And I love that story. Mm-hmm. I love that you like you said, fuck it, I'm going to do it. And now you're loving it.
Yeah.
We're out of time.
Ah.
What? It's fucked up. Okay. So let me tell everyone how to get you online. You are antoniacrane.com and also soldiersofpole.com. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram, Antonia Crane. And on Instagram, Soldiers of Pole. I've started following you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy Pride. Please be safe and have a great time out there. I'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Thank you for having me.
I want to thank the team, executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Guess who my guest is? It's Yin Q, the creator of the series Mercy Mistress, which is an online web series about the true life story of a Chinese-American dominatrix. So we are celebrating sex work and sex workers over here at Sex Out Loud. Woo-hoo. And hopefully this entire month will feature sex workers as guests on my show. That's what we're trying for. And so find me on social media across all platforms at Tristan Terramino, and then the show on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. Until next time.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Terramino on Voice America Variety.